Welcome to the Global Research News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman, brought to you by globalresearch.ca, and my co-host, Michelle Chosudovsky. Michelle is traveling out of the country, and he will be back. He will host as he's able. He's in a far corner of the world right now. It would be very late at night for him to host, but he may, and he certainly will future programs. But today my guest is Danny Schechter. Danny is a media activist. He's a critic. He's an independent filmmaker, a TV producer, an author, and a lecturer. My goodness, Danny, I don't know how you do all that. And some people call you the...
Because they can't make a living doing any one thing. That's maybe why, you know.
I wonder whether you do one thing on Monday, another thing on Tuesday.
Yeah, sometimes.
Oh, let me mention also your news dissector. They call you the news dissector. And also, you're the founder of MediaChannel.org. And you provide real information, Danny. You do it all the time. People can sign up to get the material that you send up to them. I'll let you tell listeners how to do that.
Yeah, thank you.
Just stay current on real news and information that
basically how I see it is, and this started many years ago when I was a newscaster in Boston on WBCN radio, was, you know, could we create a counter-narrative to the dominant news? Could we offer other perspectives, other points of view, not just alternatives, but critiques and analysis of what's being covered, and more importantly, what's not being covered? Because this is a problem of omission often as much as commission. You know, it's impossible for people to make sense of what's happening in the world without some background, some context, some ability to connect the dots. And so, you know, I started doing this on the radio. Now I'm doing it online in my News Dissector blog. And, you know, every day I try to take the top news and offer other takes on it, perspectives on it, and information from a wide range of sources, not just the usual suspects like the wire services or the big networks.
Well, I think anybody listening to this program, Danny, knows that if you tune into the mainstream, New York Times, CNN, there's no possibility you're going to know anything about what's going on.
That's true, Stephen, but one other point. You know, it's true that, you know, but we can't become monks and be cloistered in our own information and universe where we only read, you know, people we agree with, and we don't really keep track of how these stories are being presented to the larger public, because unless we do, we can't really understand why people believe what they do and act the way they do. You know, a lot of it is, you know, garbage in, garbage out. You know, so a lot of it is how people's viewpoints are cultivated, reinforced, and the like by a media machine. And unless we understand that machine, we're not going to be able to challenge it. So I agree with you. We need other sources, global research being a great one. But we also, you know, need to pay attention to what's in the mainstream media and challenge and confront it as best we can, as opposed to just ignore it and feel self-righteous about it, because that's where most Americans or most people are getting news and information.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%, but I think we need to do it understanding who they are, what they're doing, and the reasons they do it, and then it's safe to go there. The people who go there and believe the stuff that they put out, that's where the danger lies, and I monitor them all the time. I feel I have to. We have to take a break, and I want to get in. I want to mention your book, and then you can tell people the easy ways that they can get hold of it. Let's take a break, and we'll come right back and continue. I want to mention your newest book. You've written a lot of books, but your newest one, and we talked about it when you were on the program last, called Plunder, Investigating
Investigating Our Economic Calamity. You know, it was a book that grew out of my experience with the film In Debt We Trust, which warned of the credit crisis and for which I was roundly sort of denounced as an alarmist and a doom and gloomer and somebody who was, you know, exaggerating the problems when in fact what I reported was actually the tip of the iceberg, as we know now, because the depths of this financial crisis is, you know, incredibly massive and you know, multi-trillion dollar disaster. And, you know, so my book sort of warns about this and it explains how it happened. It looks into the subprime lending, the predatory loans, the criminal behavior of Wall Street, the failure of regulators, and the complicity of the media itself.
And they're still downplaying the severity, Danny, of the crisis that we're going through. Nobody can hide the fact that we're in a mighty mean and nasty recession. But I truly believe, and I've had a number of guests on this program, economists who don't hold back, they call it the way they see it. And the word depression has been used very frequently on this program when we get into an economic discussion. Nobody knows for sure whether we're heading into it, but it certainly looks like there's every possibility that we are.
Many Americans who are living in neighborhoods that are being devastated, they're living in a depression. They're losing their homes. They're losing their hope. You know, you see this kind of outbreak incredible suicides and murders and other things, with people becoming increasingly desperate as they can't pay their bills, as their livelihood disappears. And so, you know, this is not an abstraction. It's not something that, you know, you just read about or know about in some sort of economic seminar at the University of Chicago. You know, this is something we're all living in our lives. And it doesn't seem like it's getting any better.
Oh, it's not getting better. I think I agree with economists like Nouriel Roubini, who says the worst is still to come. And I had two economists on this program, Danny, who said that in November and December, we did not lose 500,000 jobs. We lost anywhere from 800,000 to 1,000,000 jobs.
Right.
So the
job figures, everything is understated.
Oh, way
understated. What have you? And largely because, there's two things going on here. One, the government system of collecting information excludes people who are no longer seeking jobs. So people who are out of work and have just given up because there are no jobs to find are no longer counted. So that's one problem. But the other problem is that the government, you know, believes strongly that what's needed to revive the economy is confidence. And as a result, they're hesitant to indulge us with the worst information for fear that, you know, the consequences of that will be terrible. Already in England, for example, there's an investigation in Parliament of journalists who are saying, you know, you guys, by reporting all this bad news about the economy, are actually contributing to the downfall of the economy. And therefore, you know, in other words, we want you to be propagandists, not journalists.
It's really amazing, Danny. Confidence, I don't put down the importance of confidence, but if you're sick with a very, very critical disease or whatever, a good state of mind is important, but it ain't going to cure you. And if you have cancer, confidence will not solve your problem. You need help. You need to attack the problem. You need the right remedies. And unfortunately, the remedies we seem to have chosen are to make the people who got us into this mess richer, bail out the criminals, support them for their crimes. Ordinary people who get into trouble, well, that's just too bad. You're on your own.
How do you understand the criminal dimension of all this? Because obviously, this is only covered, but, you know, you talk about a Bernie Madoff or you talk about individual cases. It's not covered as a description of the whole crisis. Do you see what I mean?
This securitization of all of these assets, I mean, a lot of this stuff was just junk when it was piled together, like making a salami, Danny, except putting the most rotten ingredients. You mix a few good things in with a whole lot of very, very risky kinds of securities, and they package this stuff together, and they sell it to people, including sophisticated buyers who didn't realize exactly how risky this was. Now, in a strong economy, there'd be no problem, but you get into a tough one, just a recession, and this stuff starts deteriorating, and now we've got every major bank in the country is insolvent, and the only difference between insolvent and bankruptcy, I think, is a legal difference. I mean, they're being propped up, they're being kept going by multi-billions, trillions of dollars that the government, using taxpayer dollars, is giving to these institutions, big ones, medium-sized ones. And the Federal Reserve won't say who's getting all this money because an awful lot of banks are in trouble. And the reason they don't want to say is because they fear that there could be runs on these banks. And then the situation will be all the worse. There's absolutely no excuse in hiding it, though. I mean, they're giving away trillions of dollars. Bloomberg says either allocated or handed out $8.5 trillion. I can't even think of numbers like that. But we're supposed to talk about Israel-Palestine, Danny.
You know, nobody is talking about this. Last point here is, you know, what's the consequences of all this? You know, it seems as if we just have endless amounts of money, and if we don't, we can print more, and there'll be no consequences. In other words, there won't be inflation. There won't be any other economic problems as a result of this. We can just keep doing this endlessly, and I think that that's a complete illusion.
It is a complete illusion, and I have no idea what effect what they're doing or planning to do will have. But the policies that I've seen and discussed on this program, Danny, and written a little about, have really been extremely counterproductive, and people a lot smarter than I am believe that. So it's possible, just like after the dot-com business back in 2000 that burst, the Greenspan policies just bandaged it over for a short time. We had a few years of up stock markets and what they call economic growth. And then all of a sudden, bad policies created an even greater problem that started unraveling in 2007, really hit hard last year. And there are very smart people who think last year was nothing compared to what this year is going to bring. Well, we'll see. It's possible they could paper it over for a time. But these same smart people say if they do, they're just sowing the seeds for something that will make today look like a garden party. Well, my goodness, what's going on today is no garden party. How much worse are they conceiving? I'm talking about awfully smart people.
Are you from Massachusetts?
Am I from Massachusetts?
Yeah.
Indeed. Grew up in Boston.
Yeah, that's how you got that garden party. Garden party. I was listening to that because I worked
Danny.
In Boston for many years. All right, let's move on.
Let's move on and talk about how the media is one-sided for Israel-Palestine. Can I just read a few real headlines this morning? One of the websites I check daily is the International Middle East Media Center, and their headlines read this morning, just very briefly. Aside from what's going on in Gaza, Israel continues to attack sporadically. You don't hear very much about it in the U.S. media, but the planes fly overhead, the drones fly overhead, the naval vessels shell the coastline, the tanks still roam in and out as they please. Oh, in Lebanon?
Who are they attacking? I'm sorry.
This is Gaza.
Oh, Gaza. Okay.
This is Gaza. There are still sporadic attacks against Gaza. But there's stuff going on in the West Bank. And the headlines read, Israeli authorities demolish a Palestinian-owned garage and warehouse in Jerusalem. Six injured by Israeli troop and settler attack on villages in Sa'ir near Hebron. Home demolitions rise in East Jerusalem. Four houses destroyed. 12 more scheduled to be demolished. Now, just imagine if the local authorities in whatever city listeners are living in came to your home and gave you 1 hour to get out, your home is going to be demolished. Well, this goes on all the time in the West Bank. Another headline, Israel to place restrictions on Al Jazeera. Well, this goes on and on. This is the stuff I read every day. This is in the West Bank.
Little of this. I mean, first of all, it's not just a question of media bias. It's you know, media is an instrument of cultivating influence in the world. It's a way of furthering, you know, a state's objective. perspectives. It's a way of attempting to deny another perspective from reaching your own people as well as reaching the world. Israel is extremely aware of and conscious of the need to construct a narrative in order to explain and justify, rationalize, and win support for its point of view. This is not new particularly, but some new techniques have been used. For one thing, after the, war of 2006 in Lebanon, the perception was that Israel had failed badly to communicate its point of view, partly because it was actually censoring journalists specifically, in Israel, and lost credibility with the Israeli public. So there was a kind of an analysis done, a rethink of this, and there were a lot of different international agencies that were contacted for their perspectives and whatnot on what Israel had to do to change its perspective. And it began to plan for this war 6 months ago by restructuring their communication strategy.
Oh, indeed. Danny, we have to take another break. Let's do it. We'll come right back and continue this.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Danny Schechter. Danny, so I don't forget, would you tell listeners how they can sign up for your bulletins that I get all the time?
Right. My blog is called News Dissector Blog. It's on mediachannel.org. You can sign up on Media Channel and on the blog itself. It's been going almost for 10 years now. We've just completely transformed the blog, adding all kinds of visuals, videos. It looks fabulous. I have an associate in Atlanta named Sherry Welch, who's helped me redesign the whole thing as a volunteer. So, it looks cool. I think you'll find the information that you won't find anywhere else. And it's, again, mediachannel.org is the website. I'm Danny Schechter. The blog is News Dissector.
We both agree, Danny, there's nothing more important than really being piped in on what in fact is happening. And it's our defense against the very ugly information that's given to us, or most important, the stuff that's never given to us.
Yeah.
So we won't know what's going on.
Yeah, well, this is one of the things I was getting to, and is the comment on how Israel sort of designed its media strategy and what its media strategy was. It taps the expertise of a lot of different PR firms, politicians, elite think tanks and the like to come up with, talking points, how it's going to present itself to the world. In this case of Gaza, Israel presented itself, as it is often done, as the victim. It was Israel that was being attacked. It was Israeli people who were losing their lives. It was totally Hamas's fault. Hamas are the terrorists. Hamas are the bad guys. Israel is the good guy. This is the basic bottom line of it. And when you repeat something like this enough, that's the narrative that sort of sinks in. When you're seeing Israeli families, going into their bomb shelters and people dying, seemingly innocent civilians, it's moving. And, to some degree, Hamas has not really cared very much about Western public opinion, what it's done, to be for whatever reasons, and there are reasons that they give, because they were under siege and they were trying to break out of the siege and all the rest of it. But, there are a lot of people who, even people who are, friends of the Palestinians, who debate whether or not the Hamas's strategy has been the right one or not. It doesn't matter. The point is, Israel likes this. They like these attacks because these attacks allow themselves to be put into the role of victim, so they then can justify whatever they choose to do. Now, one of the interesting things about this is that a lot of the documents that come the Israeli government gets, the media strategy advice, the think tanks that they use, a lot of that is secret. It's not publicly available. We don't really know how they plan their strategy, but research companies and the Israel Project. Lunz, Frank Luntz, is a big Republican analyst. He's the guy that came up with the phrase contract on America for America, you know, with Newt Gingrich. I call it contract on America. Okay. And, you know, he was able, using language, to try to influence public opinion. So he, working with something called Israel Project, which is a not-for-profit arm, really, of the Israeli government, under contract to the Israeli government, they came up with, they got some support from the Wexner family. These are the family that owns the Limited stores, based in Columbus, Ohio. And there's a report called Wexner Analysis, Israeli Communication Priorities, 2003. You can Google this. And what it does is it counsels pro-Israel advocates on how to get their point of view across. And among the suggestions, this was 2003, just listen to some of this. One, Iraq colors all. Saddam is your best defense, even if he's dead. The worldview of Americans is entirely dominated by developments in Iraq. This is a unique opportunity for Israelis to deliver a message of support and unity. For a year, a solid year, you should be invoking the name of Saddam Hussein and how Israel was always behind American efforts to rid the world of this ruthless dictator and liberate its people. Two, the fact that Israel has remained relatively silent for the 3 months before the war, for the 3 weeks of the war, is absolutely the correct strategy, according to the polling that they did. So they're constantly polling. It worked, this report says. But as the military conflict comes to a close, it's time for Israel to lay out its own roadmap for the future, including unqualified support for America. Another point, it does not help when you, Israel, compliment President Bush. When you want to identify and align yourself with America, just say it. Don't use George Bush as a synonym for the United States. Even after the destruction of the Saddam Hussein regime, there still remains about 20% of Americans that oppose the Iraq war, and they're overwhelmingly Democrat. That leaves about half the Democrats who support the war. You antagonize the people if you compliment the president. Don't do it. Finally, security sells. Security has become the key fundamental principle for all Americans. Security is the context by which you should explain Israel's need for loan guarantees and military aid, as well as why Israel can't just give up land. The settlements are, this report says, are Achilles' heel. And the best response is the need for security that this buffer creates. So here are message points coming out of deep research, aided and abetted by polling, to help Israel get its message across to America. And these views influence and infiltrate all the media coverage.
We had a break, Denny.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm on with Danny Schechter. Danny, that's powerful information. Let me add one thing to it, if I may. In my last article on Gaza, I call it Ceasefires Israeli Style. Toward the end of it, I quoted an Israeli professor by the name of Avi Shlaim. He wrote an article in the London Guardian. He now teaches at Oxford in the UK. And it was the kind of article that I think would be impossible in the New York Times or any of the major U.S. papers. He goes back to when Israel was created in 1948. This is an Israeli Jew. He served in the IDF, an intellectual, distinguished academic. And he says, establishing the State of Israel in May 1948 involved a monumental injustice to the Palestinians. And he quotes a British official, a man named John Troutbeck. He was the head of their Cairo office at the time, 1948. He wrote a letter to the UK's Foreign Minister, Ernest Bevin, at the time, and he said, Americans were responsible for creating a gangster state headed by an utterly unscrupulous set of leaders. He's talking about Ben-Gurion Israel's George Washington, but of course he was talking Menachem Begin, Yitzhak Shamir. These guys were terrorists. They blew up the King David Hotel. I mean, these were really an ugly bunch of people.
Yeah, but here's the problem I have, Stephen, with this. You know, I agree that there's a whole other way of understanding how Israel was created, who was behind it, and it's very important to understand this. The problem is that once you get into discussing any current event, particularly in this kind of environment that's been supercharged by this kind of persistent, pervasive propaganda that's coming at us in every direction. And not most Americans don't read The Guardian, okay? They're watching local news in America. That's where they're getting most of their information, or occasionally they're going online and they're usually getting the headlines. They're not getting more in-depth analysis. This is one of the problems. You know, when you do in-depth surveys of the public and what they understand about issues, they have a very superficial knowledge of things. They don't, and that's because of the changes in our media system. But, you know, in the case of Israel, every time you try to discuss something, you say to somebody, isn't that horrible? What happened the other day was so good that Israel even apologized for, you know, dropping bombs on that family by mistake, whatever, you know, whatever the case may be. And the person turns to you and they say, you're so right, that was horrible, but, and there's always a but, and the but says, what about? And they go into a litany of promoted propaganda points to change the subject totally. So it's a very hard issue to engage in, particularly to engage in a discussion of the origins of the crisis going back to 48 or even what's happening in Gaza today, because you have the butts there. You have a specialized group of people who are basically, you know, planting message points in the media, planting experts on the media, the Israeli government, you know, the people in the Israeli government. At first, they complained about the coverage and said, you're making too much of the casualties in Gaza. Then Israel changed its position because they didn't want to seem to be criticizing journalists. They said, no, actually, the coverage is quite fair. We think that you don't really appreciate fully what Israel is going through. But, you know, basically, they were supporting the media, trying to avoid a conflict. But meanwhile, secretly, they were preventing journalists from getting into Gaza to actually cover it. They were assuring that Al Jazeera and Press TV and others were the only people covering it, knowing that they have no carriage, if you will, in the United States. They're not really seen or heard very much. So there's a very careful military-style effort at media management that was going on, with the media playing, with the military actually in Israel playing the central role in all of this. And none of this was really reported on by the United States. There were some efforts in England, Channel 4 in England, for example, a reporter there challenging the Israeli spokesperson about the fact that the Red Cross was not allowed in to Gaza and that there were all these casualties there. And the Israeli spokesperson tried to change the subject 20 times, and this guy would not let him do it. Just kept on, you know, the issue, I want to raise one issue with you and one only, blah, 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 Red Cross. And the guy looked like, the Israeli spokesman looked like a fool. So Israel now is saying, you know, our policy, our strategy didn't work that well, that in fact what we've done is stirred up animosity all around the world. But they live in such a bubble of arrogance, you know, that they can't even see this clearly. And there's another factor which really hasn't been reported much. And that factor is that Israel is about to go into elections. And this whole war on Gaza was part of an effort by the Kadima Party, the party in power, to try to get public support for itself and its candidates in the coming election, to show that they were more hawkish than the right wing, which was attacking them for not doing enough. So, you know, you have a situation where the whole locus of debate has shifted dramatically to the right, and the United States, rather than playing a role here, has been sort of silent, partly because the war was actually timed to take place in the interregnum between the end of the Bush administration, the beginning of the Obama administration, and Israel supposedly stopped the conflict on the day that Obama was inaugurated. Of course, they're continuing bombing in various ways right now, but the perception is that it's just tit for tat and various incidents, and that Israel is not really engaged in the war anymore. Barack, who's the defense minister, not our Barack, but their Barack, you know, has said, you know, that the war, they're not going to resume the war. And in fact, you know, you can look at it different ways. You know, if you look at it in Israel, they got tremendous support for this from the Israeli people, even though there were a lot of people in the peace movement challenging it. They really achieved their goals and unifying Israel around the need for this action, which I found personally horrifying. I had a young man working with us here at Global Vision who was a former Israeli dissident who actually had gone to jail protesting the Israeli government, and he himself was supporting the attack on Gaza. He believed it was necessary because the Hamas are just a bunch of thugs and are just murderers and anti-Semites, and they want to wipe Israel off the map, et cetera, and so forth. So here is even a dissident from Israel backing the war. So I think that it had a lot of support. The problem is that in the world at large, it has outraged public opinion. Israel has not strengthened its position in the world at all. In fact, it's activated more forces to oppose it. So that's why Hamas, the head of Hamas, is in Iran, you know, congratulating his movement and Iran for their victory. They see themselves having survived this tremendous attack, you know, on them. They see it as a victory for themselves.
I don't think Israel wanted to destroy Hamas, Danny. And of course, they're not a bunch of lunatics. They're a democratically elected government. They're not terrorists. They've been very conciliatory to Israel. But Israel needs conflict, as you pointed out. This scared to death of peace. They need enemies.
Well, you know, I'll give you an example. Back in the 60s, when I was working for Ramparts Magazine, we were investigating CIA efforts. And one of the things I discovered was that there was a radio station in Egypt that would each Sunday, a small radio station, would carry the most vitriolic attacks, you know, drive the Jews into the sea. This became something every American Jew heard about. They want to drive us into the sea. And all of this was being, you know, echoed on a radio station that had no listenership, was basically funded by the Mossad, by the Israeli intelligence, covertly, believe it or not. And so they wanted to get out this impression. They want to characterize all Arab opinion as unreasonable, anti-Semitic, hostile to Israel, and all the rest of it, so they don't have to really negotiate with anybody. They want to polarize the situation. And that's what their media has tried to do. Unfortunately, our media has bought this and has gone along with it and has reinforced it. And that, to me, is a horrifying part of this whole situation, is that it's hard to get, you know, information. I mean, Chris Hedges, who worked for 7 years for the New York Times and reported from Gaza, you know, has really denounced in a very strident way media complicity in all of this. And, you know, it's unusual for a former New York Times person to take such a strong stance. So clearly, this is something that many in our media are ashamed of. And you know, to give Chris some credit, 60 Minutes, which had done a number of very pro-Israeli pieces, recently did a piece about the occupation and the settlements in Israel that was very strong, calling it apartheid. You know, remember the big controversy about Jimmy Carter's book, and Israel was, you know, affronted by the suggestion that there was apartheid in Israel. Now 60 Minutes, our top news program, just did a piece saying that. So the truth, you know, has a hard time working itself out, working itself into the media, but eventually it seems to get there in the same way that the truth of the Iraq war, while initially suppressed, gradually, you know, we went from 20% of the Americans against the war to 80% of the Americans against the war. So the media does shift eventually. The problem is a lot of people have to die before that happens.
Oh, indeed. indeed. And it works the same way every time, Danny. There's no question that Israelis are very supportive of what's going on. This campaign has not necessarily helped the sitting government most. The opposition has been even more hardline than the sitting government. So they're all vying with each other to look toughest. And it looks like the next prime minister will be an old one, Bibi Netanyahu, who's a raving maniac. And, you know, he comes out with the harshest statements of all. But something on the order of maybe 90% of Israelis support what their government did in going to war with Gaza.
Well,
it really is outrageous. And they get better
Israel,
information than we do, Danny.
It's because Israel is itself a very propagandized society. Now, there are some media outlets in Israel that are very, you know, the Haaretz newspaper, for example, and some correspondents there, including Amira Haas. And, you know, they've done an excellent job of covering, courageous job of covering what's happening there, and far more truthful than the New York Times or any other world newspapers, the Israeli media, not the government-controlled TV stations, but, you know, a lot of the some of the Israeli media has done a very good job, and we have to give them credit. If you look at this new movie that's out, which everyone should go see, called Waltzing with Bashir, and it's a film, an animated film, about the Israeli invasion of Beirut and Lebanon in 1983 and the massacres in the Sabra and the Shatila camps that took place there under the control of Ariel Sharon, who later became Israel's, you know, prime minister. You know, this film is incredibly interesting, but look how many years it's taken for this film to come out. So this is an Israeli film looking at Israeli policy in a critical way. It's been nominated for an Oscar. Must see it. At the same time, you know, it's shameful that it's taken so long for the truth to begin to come out.
It's very hard to get it out, Danny. I saw a documentary on the Sundance Channel, just spotted it by accident. I don't remember the name of it, and it was a couple of years ago, I think, by now. It was a documentary of Israeli forces, IDF forces, going into Palestinian homes, taking it over for themselves, and what they do to the people, the intimidation. They're not beating them up, at least not on film, but they basically take over the entire house, consign the family to maybe one room. I guess they can use their kitchen to eat or whatever. But the family is really terrified, and there is some scene.
Well, this is what the 60 Minutes piece showed, that people are actually being occupied in their own home. In other words, usually we think of occupation as a whole area is occupied by. No, this was like individual people in homes that were considered, you know, in security zones or whatever. The Israeli military just move into your home and force you to stay in another part of your home and take over your house with no compensation and with no, you know, coming and going when they want. I mean, it's shocking, you know, but at least it was on 60 Minutes, you know, just 2 weeks ago. So, I mean, these practices are becoming better known, but they don't seem to be stopping because, you know, Obama, you know, and our whole Democratic Party, all of them, are really tied in, you know, or being circumscribed by the Israeli lobby. You know, supporting Israel has been a faith, you know, a policy of faith of every administration since Truman's. They all kind of worship at the shrine of AIPAC. They all sort of deflect. And, you know, and Obama as well, you know, has taken a stance. Now, he just announced $20 million in aid for Gaza, which is, you know, kind of very little, but something.
A drop in the bucket, Danny.
Yeah, I mean, but something. But, you know, this is one of the problems. Everybody who's looked at this conflict and looked at the conflict with, you know, Islamic, you know, peoples around the world, Israel, Palestinian conflict is central to it. It's at the center of it. And, you know, now, but Israel is still sort of lobbying, wants to attack Iran, wants to expand the war. And, you know, it has a lot of media assets, what they call media assets, in order to do it. And, you know, it's very difficult. I mean, I've been on a number of TV shows, like recently, just this early this week, on Press TV, which is the Iranian program. You know, they had a guy from the Christian Zionist movement on there. You know, this guy was just like trying to intimidate everybody, you know, and insisting, you know, Hamas is just another name for Iran. You know, it's just propaganda up the kazookie, and he's not used to being challenged, which I did challenge him, okay? And, you know, I told him, listen, I heard you, now you listen to me, you know. But you need to be very aggressive in these programs, and unfortunately, they can easily devolve into, you know, incredible screaming matches, and then you don't really get your point across if you're, if they can provoke you into either, you know, getting emotional, because that's what they want to do. And so, you know, you have this situation where so far, even to this day, it's very, very difficult, even in the American media, to get stories critical of Israel out there. I certainly cover many in my blog, but I also cover what Israel says, which most people on the left don't. You know, they only take one point of view. I, you know, I feel like it's important for people to know what Israel is claiming, what the Israelis say is happening, because you can't really engage with them or talk to them. I mean, you may feel like, what's the point of talking with them? Let's just talk at them, you know? Let's just denounce them, but I'm not sure that that leads to any change. I mean, so, you know, we're in this catch-22 situation. You know, we're dealing with an issue that's extremely sensitive. It's an issue that's extremely propagandized. The media is certainly tilting towards the Israeli view of the world and the Israeli view of things. And, you know, so if you have another perspective, you have to try as best you can to get it out. I mean, you've written some magnificent articles, you know, about all of this on Global Research. I've seen them on the web. People should
read
them.
Oh, you're very kind, Danny.
No, I mean, seriously.
But I quote Israeli officials.
Yeah, but you do some substantive research. You know, you're not just recycling, you know, arguments. You're really looking into it. That's what we need. That's the kind of journalism we need. We need to try to tell the truth about this, and it's hard to do.
Well, we agree. I want to know the facts. I want to put them out. And if I make a mistake, I'll be the first to admit it and correct myself. Another break, Danny. Let's take it. And we're almost at the end of the hour. We'll finish up with a few remaining minutes. Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm on with Danny Schechter. Danny, the hour always flies by much too fast. I want to give you a chance just for some final thoughts, but one quick thought that I have, and I have this all the time, and I think I've quoted from time to time other people who believe this. Israel and our own government under Republicans and Democrats have for so long followed self-destructive policies, and these things cannot go on forever. If we don't mend our ways, if Israel doesn't mend its way, it's heading for a very bad ending. It will do what the president of Iran said. He didn't say he wants to destroy Israel, President Ahmadinejad. He said Israel, by its own policies, will end up destroying itself.
Well, this is always the problem, isn't it? I mean, it's the you know, arrogance of power, you know. It's the chutzpah, if you will. It's the misappropriation and use of the Holocaust to justify policies that almost resemble the Holocaust. It's a shanda to the Jewish people, and it's you know, a disgrace to the world. I mean, the Israeli government is not serving the Jewish people well. It's not serving the cause of the people who died, concentration camps. Don't forget, those were the greatest human rights abuses of the century. And now to replicate abuses and to have the same attitude, that we found, you know, in the Warsaw Ghetto, in Gaza City, you know, there's some similarities there that are just shocking and disgusting. Okay, it really is a disgrace. And Israel is isolating itself. I'm Jewish, obviously, or I should state that. I shouldn't have to state it, but I'm stating it. I understand. I've had people in my own family who experienced the Holocaust. I'm not oblivious to this. I'm not oblivious to anti-Semitism. I'm not oblivious to the needs of people to survive. Israel is a member of the United Nations. You know, the country has been recognized. It is not engaging seriously in the negotiations or efforts to try to achieve peace. It's just basically avoiding all of that. I made a film on the Seeds of Peace movement, young Israelis, Palestinians, and others years ago who were trying to find a way to work together, to build understanding among the peoples, to work together. I think Israel could you know, actually still, even at this late date, find a solution. If it's two states or one state, I don't know, but a solution to this issue, I think it has to. But, you know, its failure to do so is a reflection on the elite there that have been in power for so long, circulating the military, which dominates the country through its military cabinet. Most people think the Knesset runs things. It doesn't. This is a military society. It's driven by fundamentalism, almost as extreme as any other fundamentalism in the world. And it's racist. It's you know, shocking in its treatment of Arab people often. Its disregard of international human rights standards and the like. So I know I'm a journalist. I shouldn't be saying all this, but I have to just get this out because
and
I feel like we have to be honest about this. We have to be truthful. We have to hold Israel to the same standards that we hold every other country. I fought against apartheid in South Africa. Okay, I was part of that movement for 30 years in my life. I stood with President Mandela when he was inaugurated in South Africa. Okay, I was very much involved in reporting on that whole situation. I can recognize apartheid when I see it. And
Danny, we're out of time.
In Israel. Thank you, Stephen, for having
me. Oh, Danny, it's a pleasure.
MediaChannel.org. That's my email if anybody wants to reach me. Thank you.
Danny, will you come back?
I happily.
Oh, delighted. So
you
much
got me carried away here, man. You got me carried away.
Oh, okay. Thank you so much, Danny. And I invite listeners to come on back tomorrow. We do have another program. We'll have an archive repeat on Thursday and another live program on Friday. Please come back.